April the 12th. Dearest Mistress Barbara Alexeyevna, I pray you, my beloved, do tell me what ails you. Every one of your letters fills me with alarm. On the other hand, in every letter I urge you to be more careful of yourself, and to wrap up yourself warmly, and to avoid going out in bad weather, and to be in all things prudent, yet you go and disobey me. Ah, little angel, you are a perfect child. I know well that you are as weak as a blade of grass, and that no matter what wind blows upon you, you are ready to fade. But you must be careful of yourself, dearest. You must look after yourself better. You must avoid all risks, lest you plunge your friends into desolation and despair. Dearest, you also express a wish to learn the details of my daily life and surroundings. That wish I hasten to satisfy. Let me begin at the beginning, since, by doing so, I shall explain things more systematically. In the first place, on entering this house, one passes into a very bare hall, and thence along a passage to a mean staircase. The reception room, however, is bright, clean, and spacious, and is lined with red wood and metalwork. But the scullery you would not care to see. It is greasy, dirty, and odoriferous, while the stairs are in rags, and the walls so covered with filth that the hand sticks fast wherever it touches them. Also, on each landing there is a medley of boxes, chairs, and dilapidated wardrobes, while the windows have had most of their panes shattered, and everywhere stand washtubs filled with dirt, litter, eggshells, and fish bladders. The smell is abominable. In short, the house is not a nice one. As to the disposition of the rooms, I have described it to you already. True, they are convenient enough, yet every one of them has an atmosphere. I do not mean that they smell badly, so much as that each of them seems to contain something which gives forth a rank, sickly, sweet odour. At first, the impression is an unpleasant one, but a couple of minutes will suffice to dissipate it, for the reason that everything here smells. People's clothes, hands, and everything else, and one grows accustomed to the rankness. Canaries, however, soon die in this house. A naval officer here has just bought his fifth. Birds cannot live long in such an air. Every morning when fish or beef is being cooked, and washing and scrubbing are in progress, the house is filled with steam. Always, too, the kitchen is full of linen hanging out to dry, and since my room adjoins that apartment, the smell from the clothes causes me not a little annoyance. However, one can grow used to anything. From earliest dawn the house is astir as its inmates rise, walk about, and stamp their feet. That is to say, everyone who has to go to work then gets out of bed. First of all, tea is partaken of. Most of the tea urns belong to the landlady, and since there are not very many of them, we have to wait our turn. Anyone who fails to do so will find his teapot emptied and put away. On the first occasion, that was what happened to myself. Well, is there anything else to tell you? Already I have made the acquaintance of the company here. The naval officer took the initiative in calling upon me, and his frankness was such that he told me all about his father, his mother, his sister, who is married to a lawyer of Tula, and the town of Kronstadt. Also, he promised me his patronage, and asked me to come and take tea with him. I kept the appointment in a room where card-playing is continually in progress, and, after tea had been drunk, efforts were made to induce me to gamble. Whether or not my refusal seemed to the company ridiculous, I cannot say, but at all events my companions played the whole evening, and were playing when I left. The dust and smoke in the room made my eyes ache. I declined, as I say, to play cards, and was therefore requested to discourse on philosophy, after which no one spoke to me at all, a result which I did not regret. In fact, I have no intention of going there again, since everyone is for gambling, and for nothing but gambling. Even the literary chinovnik gives such parties in his room, though in his case everything is done delicately and with a certain refinement, so that the thing has something of a retiring and innocent air. In passing, I may tell you that our landlady is not a nice woman. In fact, she is a regular beldam. You have seen her once, so what do you think of her? She is as lanky as a plucked chicken in consumption, and with Faldoni, her servant, constitutes the entire staff of the establishment. Whether or not Faldoni has any other name, I do not know, but at least he answers to this one, and everyone calls him by it. A red-haired, swine-jowled, snub-nosed, crooked lout. He is forever wrangling with Teresa until the pair nearly come to blows. In short, life is not overly pleasant in this place. Never at any time is the household wholly at rest, for always there are people sitting up to play cards. Sometimes, too, certain things are done of which it would be shameful for me to speak. In particular, hardened though I am, it astonishes me that men with families should care to live in this Sodom. For example, there is a family of poor folk who have rented from the landlady a room which does not adjoin the other rooms, but is set apart in a corner by itself. Yet what quiet people they are! Not a sound is to be heard from them. The father, he is called Gorshkov, is a little grey-headed chinovnik who 7 years ago was dismissed from public service, and now walks about in a coat so dirty and ragged that it hurts one to see it. Indeed, it is a worse coat even than mine. Also, he is so thin and frail, at times I meet him in the corridor, that his knees quake under him. His hands and head are tremulous with some disease, God only knows what, and he so fears and distrusts everybody that he always walks alone. Reserved though I myself am, he is even worse. As for his family, it consists of a wife and 3 children. The eldest of the latter, a boy, is as frail as his father, while the mother, a woman who formerly must have been good-looking, and still has a striking aspect in spite of her pallor, goes about in the sorriest of rags. Also, I have heard that they are in debt to our landlady, as well as that she is not overly kind to them. Moreover, I have heard that Gorshkov lost his post through some unpleasantness or other, through a legal suit or process of which I could not exactly tell you the nature. Yes, they certainly are poor. Oh, my God, how poor! At the same time, never a sound comes from their room. It is as though not a soul were living in it. Never does one hear even the children, which is an unusual thing, seeing that children are ever ready to sport and play, and if they fail to do so, it is a bad sign. One evening, when I chanced to be passing the door of their room, and all was quiet in the house, I heard through the door a sob, and then a whisper, and then another sob, as though somebody within were weeping, and with such subdued bitterness that it tore my heart to hear the sound. In fact, the thought of these poor people never left me all night, and quite prevented me from sleeping. Well, good-bye, my little Barbara, my little friend beyond price. I have described to you everything to the best of my ability. All today you have been in my thoughts. All today my heart has been yearning for you. I happen to know, dearest one, that you lack a warm cloak. to me, too, these St. Petersburg springs, with their winds and their snow showers, spell death. Good heavens, how the breezes bite one! Do not be angry, beloved, that I should write like this. Style I have not. Would that I had. I write just what wanders into my brain, in the hope that I may cheer you up a little. Of course, had I had a good education, things might have been different. But, as things were, I could not have one. Never did I learn even to do simple sums. Your faithful and unchangeable friend, Makar Dievushkin.